Well, I enjoyed studying with you last night, and I hope that you did too. We are going back into the shade this morning. I want to remind you what that means. We, rather than coming to Holiday Inn Salina, have driven down a country lane, and we have taken refuge under the spreading boughs of a tree that is in full bloom. The air is full of its smell, and it's just warm enough that the shade feels really good. This is our metaphor this weekend for the family tree of Jesus. That is our home-based study. We're going to be moving around in that a little bit, but last night we started in the very first page of the New Testament, Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 through 17. Remember that it's a list. It is the names that are the kingly line of Christ. They represent the right to rule Israel. And we knew, looking through our glasses, that Matthew was up to something. Why? Because of the names of five women that appear there. We knew that he was up to something. And we saw that he was affirming the eternal character of God and his desire to reach out for the most unlikely person and pull that person very, very close to him. So we're looking at the tree, particularly the outsider we discover there. This morning, we're going to be looking at this outsider, specifically Ruth. We're calling her a maid in the shade. Although she doesn't start out that way, we're going to be discovering how she became a member of the family tree and how God pulled her into the shade. To do that, I need your help. So we're going to do a little exercise together, surveying the book of Ruth. So on each table, you should have a table number and a short passage from the book of Ruth. And your job for the next few minutes with your table leader is to read that passage and summarize that passage in one sentence, like Alice leads the worship for the retreat, or Marilyn MCs but does not tell jokes. Okay? Just a short sentence kind of summarizing the situation that you find in your short section of verses. Okay? Go ahead. All right, friends. If you have a sentence written down, look up here so I know how many groups are finished. Seeing a few faces. Oh, very good in the back. Thank you. All right, we're going to get started this morning. So, group leaders, if you would just be ready with that sentence, we're going to summarize the book together in a few minutes. All right? Still working, some people. Okay, if you're still working, I'm just going to ask you to do it with your inside voices. But we're going to progress now in our look at Ruth and how she became a maid in the shade. Remember last night we looked at Matthew through our first century AD Jewish glasses to help us understand. And this morning we're going to start with a different pair of glasses. They are glasses that look much closer into our past. You know, Ruth is about 3,500 years ago from our time. We're going to look back about 70 years. Can any of you see what this is down there? This is the grapes of wrath. Okay? So we are going to look at a story from the history of our own country. I know that many of you can remember this period. And we're going to go only a short way back in time to begin this morning. I'm going to be reading from chapter 5 of this book. And what has happened before we get to chapter 5 is that John Steinbeck, the author, has gone into great detail describing what happened to the land. Okay? The focus people of the story are tenant farmers. Sometimes they're called sharecroppers, or squatters would be an ugly term to use toward them. But they are farmers who do not own the land. They work the ground, they receive a percentage of the cash from the crop, but certainly what Steinbeck calls the owner men ha- have the upper hand in the situation. They are very much outsiders. So Steinbeck has talked us through the spring rains not coming, and the weeds and the young crops sprouting up together, bright green, and then becoming dark to preserve moisture, and then becoming yellow, and then bending over and pointing in the direction of the wind. And then the dust rising up from the ground in a cloud and falling instead of rain, dust falling all over their homes. So we are going to begin reading in chapter 5 of this epic novel of our past. And what you are going to be watching are photographs of amazing photojournalist from the 30s. Her name is Dorothea Lange. And she documented through photography the migrant worker movement, meaning people who left our part of the country for California to try and feed their family. So, again. Okay, we'll see what happens. All right. The owners of the land came onto the land, or more often, the spokesmen for the owners came. They came in closed cars, and they felt the earth with their fingers. The tenants from their sun-beaten dooryards watched uneasily when the cars drove along the field, and at last the owner men drove into the dooryards and sat in their cars to talk out of the window. The tenant men stood beside the cars for a while and then squatted on their hands and found sticks with which to mark the dust. In the open doors, the women stood looking out, and behind them the children, corn-headed children with wide eyes, one barefoot on top of the other barefoot. The women and the children watched their men talking to the owner men. They were silent. Some of the owner men were kind because they hated what they had to do, and some of them were angry because they hated to be cruel. And all of them were caught in something larger than themselves. The owner men sat in the cars and explained, "You know, the land is poor. You've scrabbled at it long enough, God knows." The squatting tenant men nodded and wondered and drew in the dust, and yes, they knew. If only the dust would fly. If only the top would stay on the soil, it might not be too bad. "Well, it's too late," the owner men explained. The squatting men raised their eyes to understand. "Can we just hang on? Maybe the next year will be a good year." They looked up questioningly. "We can't depend on it." The squatting men looked down again. "What do you want us to do? We can't take less share of the crop. We're half starved now. The kids are hungry all the time. We got no clothes. If all the neighbors weren't the same, we'd be ashamed to go to meetings." And at last, the owner men came to the point. "The tenant system won't work anymore. One man on a tractor can take the place of 12 or 14 families. We pay him a wage and take all the crop. We have to do it." The tenant men looked up alarmed. "But what'll happen to us? How'll we eat?" "You'll have to get off the land." And now the squatting men stood up angrily. "But it's our land. We measured it and broke it up. We were born on it. We got killed on it and died on it. Even if it's no good, it's still ours. That's what makes it ours. Being born on it, working it, dying on it. That makes ownership." "We're sorry," the owner man said, and now they grew angry. "You will have to go. You'll be stealing if you try to stay." "But if we go, where'll we go? How'll we go? We got no money." "Maybe you can go on relief. Why don't you go on west to California? There's work out there, and it never gets cold. Why, you can reach out anywhere and pick an orange. There's always some kind of crop to work in. Why don't you go there?" And the owner men started their cars and rolled away. The tenant men squatted down on their hands again to wonder. Their sunburned faces were dark, and their sun-lipped eyes were light. The women moved cautiously out of the doorways toward their men, and the children crept behind the women cautiously, ready to run. After a time, the women asked, "What did he want?" And the men looked up for a second, and a smolder of pain was in their eyes. "We've got to get off." "Where do we go?" the women asked. "We don't know. We don't know." With that set of emotions, let me read you the beginning of another story. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. These are the first two verses of the book of Ruth. This is a dire, dire situation that the Jews have found themselves in, the Israelites. And unlike our time, for the Israelites, famine was a sign of God's judgment. This was a specific part of the relationship that he had designed for them. It's laid out specifically at the end of Deuteronomy, that when famine occurs in Israel, the Israelite people should understand that they are under God's judgment. The book that precedes Ruth, Judges, the refrain of that book is, "Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." In just a matter of a couple hundred years, the people have begun to make very bad decisions, and they have turned from God and gone in the opposite direction from him. We see that we start the book of Ruth with a family unit. There's a husband. This is the picture I like to represent, Elimelech. This is a man who is having to leave his ground to feed his kids. Terrible situation. So this is my Elimelech. He is a man who is very discouraged. He has been humbled to the point where he can't provide for his wife and kids. And he is packing them up and moving them to, of all places, Moab, which through your glasses, you are seeing trouble there, because every incident that Israel has had with Moab in the history of the two countries has been very bad. You know, we mentioned that last night. I wish we had time to talk about those things specifically. Elimelech has a wife. This is my picture of Naomi. This woman in 1936 was on the road with her kids. You can see she has two boys and a baby. When Dorothea Lange took her picture, she interviewed her a little bit, and Florence Thompson told Dorothea that she had had to sell the tires from her car to buy food. So they could no longer drive. They were on foot. They were staying in a lean-to tent. And these two boys were killing birds and digging frozen vegetables out of the field. And that's how they were staying alive. And you can see that there is a lot of care on this woman's face. And that's how we need to think about Naomi. Is a woman who is careworn, because when we pick up in chapter 3, listen to what happens. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, we're in the middle of verse 4, picking up on verse 5 there. Both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. So this woman has been forced by starvation to leave her home, to go to her enemies to beg food, and now she has buried her entire family. And now she has two daughter-in-laws to provide Moabites, who are Moabites. So, this is where we find our star character. This is my Ruth. This is also a photograph taken by Dorothy Lange of a woman on the road by herself. Ruth's situation was so desperate. These are people who have had to get off their homeland. They have had to go to the enemy. And now, they are as far as you can imagine from this tree. There is no scent of flowers in the air. There is no light trickling through the petals of flowers. There is only dry dust, hot sun, dirt filling your mouth and your ears, and sweat running down the back of your neck. That is where we pick up with Naomi and Ruth. Ruth, we could call the ultimate outsider. You may remember some of these details from last night. First of all, she is a pagan. The religion of the Moabites was so reprehensible. It involved all kinds of illicit sex, open idolatry, and they have gotten Israel in trouble with these practices before. This is Ruth's religion. The text makes clear that at the beginning of the story, both Orpah and Ruth belong to other gods. This is her beginning. She is a Moabite. She is a political and territorial enemy with Israel. They share a border. There's all kinds of squabbles over that border. We read in verse 5 that early on, Ruth became a widow, very young. And again, in this culture, that makes her very vulnerable. She has no way to provide for herself financially. She's dependent on her husband. Now her husband is gone. She is also childless, and we talked about looking at childlessness last night through our glasses. It is much, much more of a negative mark than it would be for anything that we have experienced. I think a closer parallel, my friend Angie sees every day. Angie lives in a capital city in Central Asia. She and her husband teach in a seminary there. I was visiting with Angie in January, just this last winter, and Angie was telling me that in her country, when a woman gets married, she is required to wear a specific color from head to toe. Everywhere she goes, she must wear this color. Every morning when she gets up, she must put this color on, head to toe. And she must wear it until she has a baby. So everywhere she goes in the community, everyone knows of her shame, that she has failed in this culture and in the Bible's culture. Certainly all of the blame put on woman's body for not producing a child. So this is the situation where we find Ruth. And she is a day laborer. In order to just eat, this is not about saving for retirement, this is just about getting a meal, she becomes a gleaner, and some of you are going to summarize those sections for us in a moment. This is someone who is bending down in the sun, in the heat, in the dust of harvest, which we have all experienced being from Kansas. She is almost a slave. This is Ruth's outsider status when we begin with her. Now, I would like to have you help me go through the plot of the book of Ruth so that we know what happens. So, table one, could you give me your summary?
We're table one, and we're not very creative. Yeah, we're not very creative and cutesy, but we said Ruth was encouraged to go home.
Yes. Who encouraged her to do so? Yes. Naomi encourages Ruth to go back to Moab. Table two. What happens next?
Can we have the references?
Oh, sure. Yes. I'll give them to you. That was chapter 1, verses 6 through 10. Table 2 is going to summarize for us chapter 1, 11 through 14. if I had sons, you have to wait for them to grow up, and this just isn't going to work. So get on with it. So that was 11 through 14. Table 3 is going to summarize 15 through
18.
Ruth was a very devoted woman who made a commitment to follow her mother-in-law Naomi and accepted her God, regardless of the cost of her child. This is a really good part. Table 3, you've got a fun part here. So Ruth displays this incredible loyalty to someone who has nothing to offer, right? Naomi has nothing to give her, and yet Ruth devotes herself, and that very important part that you mentioned, thank you, about choosing Naomi's God over her own. We'll talk about that in a moment. Table 4 is going to summarize 19 through 22.
Naomi was returning home bitter.
Yes. Naomi goes home bitter. She changes her name. And who can blame her, right? She's buried her whole family. If that doesn't affect you deeply, something is wrong. Table 5 is going to start chapter 2 for us, verses 1 through 3.
Ruth, a Moabite, and Naomi were poor widows who gleaned or picked up leftover grain in Moab's field.
Thank you, Jean. That is important because we have the entry of another major character here, Boaz. And as we see at the bottom of our list, Ruth becomes a day laborer. She goes to the field and tries to pick up enough food for them to eat one day at a time. Table 6 is going to do chapter 2, 4 through 7.
Boaz noticed Ruth, a Moabite, and
because Boaz is the opposite of this list, and yet he extends favor to the woman who is characterized by our list here. Very good. Table 7 is going to do chapter 2, 8 through 13.
God rewards her protection and her life.
Oh, there's a great verse in there that we're going to look at in a few minutes. Yes. Table 8 is going to do 2:14 through 16.
Boaz invites Ruth to eat with him, and then he covers over to the grain.
More unusual provision going on for Ruth being invited to the table of the land owner, to the master of the plantation. Here she comes to sit with him, and then he makes special provision for her to have more than enough. Table 9, chapter 2, 17 through 23. Very good. Give me an example of God's sovereignty in your passage. Okay. Very good. Table 10. Going to begin chapter 3 for us, 1 through 9. Yes. So this person, Ruth, who has been at the very bottom, ends up actually providing for Naomi. There's a role reversal there. Very interesting thing that happens in the text. Table 11 is going to do 3, 10 through 14.
Boaz expresses his desire to be with his neighbor, but he used someone else as a closer relative and wanted to do things the proper way.
Well done. Yes, that phrase, kinsman redeemer, is going to come up shortly, so keep that in your mind. And notice how Boaz seems to know that there is a set of rules that he's following as he expresses interest in being kinsman. Table 12, chapter 3, 15 through 18.
Ruth, in obedience,
made a caution
not to make
a decision. Who cautioned her?
Her mother-in-law.
Yes, very good. And table 13 is going to start chapter 4, verses 1 through
8. Because the today's special was redemption and the wife for the price of the sandal.
Well done. I love it. That would be an example of how things look really strange without our glasses on. Like, what is this taking off of shoes and handing them around? It's really weird. Okay, table 14, 4, 9 through 12. That is a great observation, table 14. Rachel and Leah would be ultimate insiders. They are the wives of Jacob, the patriarch, whose name changes to Israel. The whole country is named after this guy. And the elders of the town give this blessing to Ruth. May she become like their mothers. Very beautiful. And table 15, close us out with 4, 13 through 17.
The Lord enables her.
So Ruth becomes a mom. Thank you for your help in summarizing the plot of the book of Ruth. We are going to now look at Ruth's transformation, okay? So remember where we have begun with Ruth as an ultimate outsider. This is how she becomes a maid in the shade. This is her life story, moving from that hot road from Moab down to Bethlehem, to a believer in Yahweh. Which table had her confession of faith? Forget. Yes, I think it was. So Ruth stops with Naomi and says, I'm going where you're going because I want your God to be my God. And this is the turning point. This is the hinge of the book. The reason is because, like we were saying last night, God never changes. And so the way that we enter a relationship with God has never changed. What Ruth says is, I believe in him. I am choosing him over my gods, and he is going to be the authority in my life. I want to follow him. I am willing to change my identity for your God. She becomes a believer. She enters the covenant community, the chosen people with whom God has a special relationship laid out in the first huge chunk of the Bible. She goes to them and she lives among them. Her geography has changed from Moab into the land of Israel. She becomes a wife. So this is, we would tend without our glasses on to see this as a romantic story, but for Ruth, to become Boaz's wife is really provision and protection for her. Incredible. She becomes the mother of kings, as table 15 told us, I think. Who is Ruth's great-grandson? King David. Oh my goodness, she's going to be the great-grandmother of the high king. We like that through our glasses a lot. And she gains community status. I can't remember which one of the groups has. Do you recall if you had the section where the text calls Boaz a man of valor or maybe a man of status? That is a technical term. It is an accolade for Boaz's character. He is upstanding. He is safe. A safe person for her to trust. He is recognized and respected by the people of the community. And she becomes his wife. So you can see here that we have had a radical transformation in the life of Ruth. And as we observe this radical transformation, we stand on the edge of a cliff because we are in danger of asking the wrong question of the text. We can see that Ruth got everything she wanted out of God. She becomes rich, she becomes married, she becomes a mom. Those were things that gave her status in her community. And so, because we have chosen to believe in Yahweh as well and enter a covenant with him and live among his people, it might be easy to start expecting those same things for ourselves. We ask the wrong questions of the Bible. If we ask those wrong questions, we do this horrible injustice to Naomi's character. You can see that she is the main character too. too, her story is carried all the way through. Do you think that she ever forgot burying her boys in Moab? Do you think that not having us ever fully left her home? Or burying her husband on the side of the road somewhere? This is a person whose pain is real. And if we approach the Bible to get what we want out of it, it's horribly disrespectful to the real heartache that exists here. So what would be the appropriate way for us to approach the book of Ruth? Remember what we were saying about the book of Ruth being written during the time of the judges, when everyone is doing what is right in his own eyes and the people have turned away from God? Through her life story, God is giving a template about his character. So the right question to ask as we approach the book of Ruth is, what is God like? His people have turned away from him. He's calling them back. He's reminding them of his character. So we're going to answer the question, what is God like, in three ways in the book of Ruth. We're going to start with God, the God Chesed. I've left this word in Hebrew for our study today because there's not a very good translation from Hebrew into the English. There are things that are included in the idea of Chesed that we can say in English, like love, kindness, loving kindness, mercy, loyalty. It's a beautiful idea, but we can't fully capture it in our language. And yet it is the primary way that God describes himself and the kind actions of others in the book of Ruth. So I'm going to read a short paragraph for you about what Chesed does so that we can hear it in our own language. This is a book about Ruth by Carolyn Custis James, and this is what she says about Chesed. Two parties are involved, someone in desperate need, and a second person who possesses the power and the resources to make a difference. Chesed is driven not by duty or legal obligation, but by bone-deep commitment, a loyal, selfless love that motivates a person to do voluntarily what no one has a right to expect or ask of them. They have the freedom to act or to walk away without the slightest injury to their reputation. Yet they willingly pour themselves out for the good of someone else. It's the kind of love we see expressed most fully in Jesus. The Bible is going to build up to the Christ story a full explanation of what Chesed is. So that our first answer that we find embedded in the book of Ruth to what is God like is, he is the God of Chesed, who does loving things voluntarily. Second answer to what is God like in the book of Ruth is that he's the God who sends the kinsman redeemer. Was that my table up there at the back? Who brought up the kinsman redeemer? Yes. That is a term used of Boaz here in the book of Ruth. And what does that mean? Well, Boaz is going to financially provide for Ruth and raise up her status in the community by taking over the property that belonged formerly to her father-in-law, Elimelech. And he's going to marry her. There are three conditions that must exist for a person to be a viable candidate for kinsman redeemer. The first is that he must be a blood relative. He must be part of the family. Elimelech is connected to Ruth through the marriage of Elimelech to Naomi, and then Ruth's marriage to their son. So Boaz qualifies that way as being part of the family, a relative. Second condition, the kinsman redeemer must be able to pay the price. Our table who had the weird sandal incident read about the custom that is going to take place. You have to have the money to pay for what you're going to buy. And the person who would be first in line to be a kinsman redeemer couldn't pay for it. will. There's a little explanation in the text about if you're really going to do this, what one person does is take off his sandal and hand it to the other. You have to look at that through your glasses or it's just shaky. So, three conditions. The first, blood relative. Second, able to pay the price. Third, willing to redeem. We can see also from that sentence about the special of the day that the role of kinsman redeemer is not forced upon anyone. It is a voluntary action going along with hesed love. If you are willing to redeem, then you may volunteer yourself to be kinsman redeemer. And for us, this concept is most fully recognized in Jesus. Let's step through the steps again with Jesus in mind. First, he is our blood relative. He took on flesh. He forsook heaven, came to our planet, born of a virgin, lived his childhood, his life, his ministry, able to die now that he is one of our blood relatives, and then resurrected, giving us a promise of a resurrected body. Jesus satisfies that first condition because he became one of our family. He is like us. He is able to pay the price because he is not only fully human, but fully God. He has lived perfectly and can satisfy the Father on our behalf fully, able to save completely, redeem to the fullest extent. He satisfies that second condition. Thirdly, he did this out of love. Was a voluntary action for Jesus to come, die, redeem, raise. So both Hesed and the kinsman redeemer we see modeled in the book of Luke and also satisfied in Christ. The third way that God is telling about himself, the right answer to the Israelites at the time of the book of Luke, is that he is the God of transformation. He reaches out for this incredibly unlikely person, Ruth, who is at the very bottom of society, and he raises her up to heights of dignity and significance that would have been impossible without his intervention. And for us, transformation is available only in Jesus. Full transformation, the kind that takes us from black-heartedness to glory, eternal glory, fully available only in Jesus. These parables in the book of Ruth. These three right answers, Hesed, kinsman redeemer, and transformation, are symbolized in the book of Ruth in a metaphor. It is spread wings. It's very beautiful. I'm going to read for you verse 12 of chapter 2. 2 verse 12. Boaz is speaking to Ruth. He says, "May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." This is the picture of the mother bird with her wings open and she's protecting her babies. And this beautiful picture shows up actually all through the scripture. You might be able to hear running through your mind phrases from the Psalms like "the shadow of the Almighty," or "I take refuge under his wings," or maybe you even hear this verse that comes from our home-based book, Matthew, where Jesus is recorded saying, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how I have longed to gather your children together as a hen covers her chicks with her wings." Spoken from the mouth of Christ himself, this picture of full integration, protection, belonging, all through the scripture, as the relationship that we enter through faith to covenant with God under his wings. This is where we started with Ruth, a woman on the road. She is vulnerable, and she has transformed through the God of Hesed into someone like this.